And the first thing I want to do is to thank you. To thank you for being there. To thank you for being there for so many women who have nowhere to go, have no one to help, who live in communities that deny what is happening right in the apartment next to them, in the house down the street, in the house down the lane. I thank you for being there for women who need help. When we talk about battery, we are not talking about something that only happens to a few women. We're talking about something that happens to possibly as many as half of the married women in the United States. That is staggering. It is staggering to understand that the place where a woman is most at jeopardy is, in fact, in her own home. That 4,000 women a year in the United States are killed in their own homes, not by strangers who break in, but by men who presumably love them. It is urgent to understand what is, and I use the word in quotes, but I use it seriously, what is normal about battery. Why it doesn't seem to the husband, often to the wife, to the neighbors, to the families, why it doesn't seem that something unbelievably disastrous and terrible is happening when a woman is being beaten. Why is that? And when I say that battery is normal, what I mean is that battery expresses a lot of attitudes and opinions that people have about women, including that women have about women. And it also expresses a power relationship between men and women that is taken to be not only normal and commonplace, but correct, the right relationship. That it's appropriate that men have power over women. That it's appropriate that men have certain kinds of control over women's lives, especially over the lives of women that they're married to, or women that they live with, women with whom they are, quote unquote, intimate. I come from a time being older than you could possibly imagine. When you all and I did not exist, when there was no recognition at all that a woman who was being beaten, tortured, on the verge of being murdered, needed help. For those of you who remember, remember now. For those of you who never knew, try to imagine. It was her fault. She did deserve it. She brought it on herself. If she weren't bad, it wouldn't be happening. And as far as she knew, the person to whom it was happening, it wasn't happening to anybody else in the world. She was the only one. The only one who was being treated this way by her husband. Because we didn't talk about battery. Battery did not have a social existence. It was a private, secret nightmare for women who had nowhere to turn. And when women asked for help, they were told exactly what I said to you. It's your fault. Look to yourself. What are you doing wrong? Do it right. Well, of course he got angry. He didn't do the laundry right. He works hard all day. Well, he's very upset. There's a recession on. Well, of course when he comes home at night, he doesn't want his peas on that side of the plate. Of course not, fool. And his response may or may not have been a little bit excessive, but hey, he's under a lot of pressure. Hey, he doesn't know the meaning of the word pressure. pressure. I want to remind you what the experience of battery is, because we become cold to it. And especially those who work in social services, you see so many people, you deal with so many situations. You're dealing with what happens at the moment. And maybe screaming out to survive yourself sometimes what has really been happening to the woman day in and day out. And why it is that for her, there's never a moment of freedom from the pressure that she is under. Being battered is being hit, yes. It is being hit a lot, yes. It is being hit so that you hurt, yes. It is being hit so that sometimes the bruises show and sometimes they don't show, yes. And sometimes it is being hit by someone who is very skilled and knows how to hit, has learned through hitting other women, has learned by learning on the woman he's hitting now. Women are battered by policemen who are trained in how the human body responds to pain, by doctors who know where the kidney is and where the spleen is. But being battered is also being a captive. And this is the part that's urgent to understand. When you look at what happens to women in battery, the only place that you see the kind of systematic injuries, physical and psychological injuries that come from battery, are in prisons where people are tortured. And virtually everything now that we know about how to help people who have been tortured in prisons under situations of political repression comes from what we have learned by studying what is done to battered women. Because in the home, the situation that's created is virtually the same. Now, why should it be that in a home, a woman is a prisoner, a woman is a captive, a woman is in a nightmare that she can't get out of? I mean, there are a lot of reasons. There are a lot of reasons for that. Some of them are economic. Some of them are social. Some of them have to do with the inability of the neighbors to hear the scream. A lot of them have to do with fear of the man who's hurting the woman. Hey, you don't want him coming after you. Better you should not know what is happening to her. And before the existence of all of you, when she would turn to other people and ask for help, not only was it her fault, but most of the time they would deny that it was even happening. Surely she was misunderstanding, misinterpreting, misrepresenting, misexpressing, making a terrible mistake. And the terrible mistake was not that she was with the man who was hurting her. It was that she was complaining about it. When you are battered over time, you are physically tortured. Now, I want you to understand what I mean. I'm not speaking in hyperbole. I don't mean that you're hurt very, 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 very bad. I don't mean that it's a very bad thing that you're being hurt, although it's a very bad thing. I mean that batterers purposefully, seriously torture the women that they're hurting. They do it physically. Sometimes they use degrees of force that are almost unconscionable to believe that it's possible. For instance, hitting a woman with a big wooden beam, using knives on a woman, using a baseball bat on a woman. Sometimes the woman is tied up and tortured, and it is called sex when she is hurt. She is often sleep deprived, purposefully, the way she would be if she were in a prison. He takes her life and he messes with it in order to fracture it, to break it into little pieces so that she has no life left. Now, the effects of sleep deprivation on prisoners who are being tortured aren't any different than the effects of sleep deprivation on women. What does it mean to have a life as a sovereign human being when your body belongs to someone else such that you can't get a night's sleep? Your perceptions become distorted. And you ask for help and you're told that your perceptions are distorted. And you say, right, I haven't slept in however long. Some of it is purposeful. A woman is let to sleep for 20 minutes, and then 20 minutes, and then 20 minutes, and then 20 minutes. Each piece of sleep interrupted by some kind of an assault. Sometimes day in and day out, for weeks, for months. The power of the batterer is in his fists. It's in his money, it's in his social power, but it is also in his apparent irrationality. It is in the fact that the woman who is being hurt cannot anticipate what he will do next. What he will do next to her, what he will do next to someone else, to a child, or frankly, to a dog, to a cat, to whatever she loves, whomever she loves, what he will do next, she doesn't know. If she stands up to him, she will be hurt. If she submits to him, she will still be hurt. When you live in a world that's governed by laws you don't understand and can't understand, you can be destroyed mentally by that world. No human being can live being subjected to the irrational hatred of another person in intimacy, in their private life. It's hard enough if you have to deal with prejudice in the social world, on the street. It's hard enough if you're going to be beaten up because your skin is the wrong color, because you have the wrong partner, the wrong sexed partner by your side. That's hard enough. But when in your intimate life you are going to be hurt and you don't know why, and you don't know when, and you don't know how, the only thing you know is that if not today, it will be tomorrow. It will drive you mad. And then they will say, aha, you see, she was mad. The fear that the battered woman experiences is beyond the power of any language I have to express to you, because it is a fear of a recrimination that is on the one hand total. The man controls the total universe of the woman. And on the other hand, it has to do with every little detail of her life. It is a punishment for anything at any time, and therefore one lives in an ocean of fear. One swims and swims and swims and swims and swims and thinks, so what if I keep swimming? And when will this stop? And God, help me. Help me. Let me die. And that is what happens to battered women who do not get away. That is what happens. They say, they pray. I will tell you, they pray to die because it seems peaceful and it seems better. And it probably is better. There is a kind of humiliation that goes with being battered. That is very deep. It is very deep because, number one, one knows that one has done something wrong or it would not be happening. One believes that. A woman has been told that all of her life, basically that she is responsible for the behaviors of the men around her. And therefore, when this is happening to her, there is an internalized part that we all have, and I don't care what your ideology is, I don't care how militantly feminist or not you are, I don't care how deeply religious you are, there is a part that says, it's my fault, I did it. And there is an extraordinary sense of humiliation in not being able to stand up as a simple human being with dignity. But there's also something deeper, and that's a shame. It's a kind of shame that I believe only people in captivity can feel. When you are forced to do things that are incredibly degrading to you. And one thing that is incredibly degrading is to follow the orders of somebody else just because they give them, just because you're afraid. In other words, to experience within yourself a complete lack of self-respect, so bottomless that there is no self there to find, to respect, and that's a consequence of being battered. This all happens in a situation of intimacy. This happens not because the Nazis have marched into town and taken over your home. It doesn't happen because there's a plundering horde coming from somewhere else. It happens with someone, presumably, that you're with because you care about them, you love. Maybe you decided to have children together. Maybe you had a feeling of friendship for them. But you're with them for reasons of intimacy. They matter to you. You care about them. And partly you're there because you think that they care about you. We have a very skewed standard for loving and caring for women. We have a double standard, which is to say, a man can show how much he cares by being violent. See, he's jealous, he cares. A woman shows how much she cares by how much she's willing to be hurt, by how much she will take, how much she will endure, how suicidal she's prepared to be. In all these years, thinking about battery, having experienced it, talking to other women, there is one form of self-blame that I feel, and that when I look at women, I think is true. I think the Christians call it the sin of pride. And the pride in this situation for women is that we believe that for the sake of love, we can endure anything. And we make it a point of pride to endure anything. We cannot, we must not, we should not. Our shoulders do not have to carry that weight. No, they don't. We do not bear the burden of all the love in the world such that we are annihilated for the sake of somebody else's life or for the more selfish sake of proving that we're really good women. That we're really good, honest, loving mates. That really we didn't deserve it. Look, we're still here. Yes, he did something terrible, but look, here we are, prepared still to love him. There is an ideology to romance that says, basically, that force, the use of force, is an expression of strong feeling for a woman. that when a man uses various gradations of force against her, what he's doing is expressing his very deep desire for her. Most of us have been taught that in one form or another. Some of us have learned it through our religions. Some of us have learned it through popular culture. Some of us have seen Gone with the Wind 4,000 times. It is everywhere. We measure his desire by what he's willing to do to her, and we celebrate the force that he's willing to show. And then, when she shows up in a pile of bleeding bones in an emergency room hospital, we say, oh, that wasn't so romantic after all. No, it wasn't. And it wasn't from the beginning. And that's what we have to understand. It wasn't romantic from the very, very start, when it just looked like, hey, God, he really wants her a lot. There is, in romance, in sexual relations, there is an implicit, not an accidental, a purposeful, a systematic sense of ownership, of how men own women. Sexuality can be an expression of that. It can be an expression of physical ownership of women. So, we have the experience of being battered, and the husband is doing the same things as a torturer would do. He's doing the same things as an assassin would do, but he's the husband. We're not allowed to say bad things about him. We're not even allowed to say bad things about him when he's actively brutalizing a woman. And when he does it in front of our eyes, we turn around, most of us, and walk away. Hey, and it's not that we say nothing. No, we say bad things, but we say them about her. It is easy to say that men beat women in order to express domination, to exercise control. These are easy sentences to say.